Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the podcast. My guest today has had a massive impact on my life since I found him on the Brian Kane podcast a couple of years ago. He is an entrepreneur within the fitness industry, a motivational speaker, an extreme athlete and coach, and one of the most mentally tough people I've ever had the pleasure to connect with. And his name is Marcus Smith. Marcus, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, buddy. Thanks a lot, David, for having me on. Appreciate it, mate.
Can you tell everyone a little bit about what it is that you do and, yeah, just a little bit about yourself in general?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. As you said there, I guess you give me a very nice intro, mate, so I appreciate that. I guess my role in life is, I'm a motivational speaker. I'm an entrepreneur in the fact that I run two businesses. One is my fitness company, Inner Fight, which is, to all intents and purposes, a 5,500 square foot gym, functional fitness gym here in Dubai, where I live. And that part of that gym also have a large endurance section where we train anyone from someone that wants to run 1K without stopping to Ironman triathletes and ultra athletes. Under my other business that I run with my wife, is a company called Smith Street Paleo, which is a paleo food company that we established here in Dubai in 2016. And the third part that I kind of play is extreme athlete, where I, over the last, I don't know, for a while now, just kind of chosen to do extreme challenges that have excited me or that have people have sent over to me for three main reasons, David. I think this is important that we get this out straight away. I have quite a clear why I do this stuff. The first thing is because I want to explore human potential and try and let people realize that they have a huge potential. And not only explore my own, but let those people realize that, yeah, if I can do something, then maybe they can do something as well. The second reason is when you do these challenges, you always learn something. And life for me is almost a series of seminars, I guess. And I learned a lot at university, but I've also learned a shit ton since I've been doing sort of extreme challenges. And the third reason I do them is because I just want to make my family proud. I love my mom and my dad and my wife. They support me all the time. They're the ones that I think they suffer. I'm often careful using the word whether I make them suffer through my challenges, but I think it's probably a lot easier for me being out putting myself in those situations than for my mom sat at home on the end of a WhatsApp from my wife, you know. And most of the time I'm in places that are a little bit remote, and, you know, or I go out to the mountains and I think they worry about me a lot, but I'm just doing all that I'm doing just to try and make them proud. So, and I wake up, mate, every day and I just ask myself, what can I do today to get better? And a lot of the time that's in the service of others. I'm a coach and it's my job, and sort of really a massive honor of mine that I've been able to help people in and around the world. And so that's what I do, mate. And I talk to people like you on podcasts and life's pretty awesome.
That's amazing. And just your attitude is something that absolutely inspires me. Something I want to ask about, just on what you were saying there, although like I'm not exactly an ultra endurance runner, but the stuff that you do inspires me a lot. What would you say to someone who kind of disconnects themselves from your message because you do these crazy kind of feats of like human potential, and someone who thinks that they could never do that? What would you say to someone like that who doesn't resonate with your message because of that?
That's a really awesome question, mate. Like a lot of people will look and go, oh yeah. And they'll say to me, they'll turn around and they'll say, oh, you can do that. That stuff's easy for you. Well, actually it's not, you know? And one of my sort of thought processes about life is that everyone is fighting a war in some way. My going out and running for 24 hours or anything else that I've done is my way of fighting my war. For some people, just waking up in the morning and getting to work can be an absolute mission. And that's why, mate, we're in this world at the moment that always we're comparing with others. And we're like, oh, if David's doing that, why aren't I doing that? I'm just not as good as him. It's fucking bullshit, mate. We're all so individual. Of course, I get ideas from other extreme athletes and stuff on challenges, but I never do stuff. My motivation is not based on what Tom next door is doing. It's because I'm dialed into what I want to do. And I wake up every day and I focus on that. So my message for people, mate, is super clear. don't give a shit about what Marcus Smith is doing. If I can help you to get a little bit of motivation, I'm stoked. And that's one of the reasons why I do it, to help other people realize their human potential. But there's no need to compare. You're your own person. So wake up this morning, and if your biggest battle is to get to work, just fight that battle and just get on with it. And I just think, mate, we're too often comparing ourselves with others, and we just really don't need to. We just need to focus all our energy on living our lives and feeling and being amazing people in our own lives. And then all this good stuff will happen.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And what brought you to the stage where you're, like, let's say, challenging yourself or someone else might be running 5 kilometers down the road without stopping, or as you said, 1 kilometer even. What brought you to the stage where your challenge has to be 24 hours running around a 400-meter track nonstop?
Because I'm an idiot. Mate, listen, I guess that there's a few different ways to answer that, David, and I might talk for the next 5 minutes nonstop, but I'll try to keep it. Listen, there's a few things, mate. I was born into an environment of what I call performance. My parents did sport when I was young, and I believe that has had a profound impact on my life. When I was very young, I remember my parents going out running, my dad riding his bicycle. I'd wake up on the weekends and they'd be up before me. They wouldn't be there. And I'd be like, where's my dad? And, you know, dad would be out riding 100, 120 Ks on his bike. And so from a very young age, I was like, this is the norm. This is what I want to do. I just, you know, like when you're a kid and you put on your parents' shoes, I would try and climb up and sit on my dad's bike, you know? And then when my parents would go out running, I'd run down the street and I'd try and time it so that I was getting down the street as they were coming back from their run. So I was born into this environment that, and that's why I'm so huge on environment. I think our environment and what we do, we can control a lot. Our environments is key to our success. And I think as well, there's two things, mate. As you move through life, you can either do things faster or for longer. And I do strive to go faster, but it excites me more to do things for longer. I love doing long endurance events. I love the thought of going out into, I was mid of last year or September last year, I was in conservation reserves in Kenya. There's no phone signal, there's nothing. And I was there for 5 days and I had to run 230 kilometers. And that excites me absolutely beyond reason. And, you know, it actually, there's a little bit more of the second part of the story really is, mate. In 2018, I was cycling and I was preparing for ultra endurance events and I was hit by a truck on my bike. And what pursued was a little bit of a nightmare in a way, but I think it was actually the best thing that happened to me, is that I hit a brick wall at 54 kilometers an hour. And on impact, I shattered my scapula, broke 7 ribs, and I punctured my left lung, which obviously left me on the floor fighting for my life. And I was 3 days in intensive care, and obviously I made it through. But in those times, I had a lot of different thought processes. And when I got out, and I can share a load of them, or you can watch my documentary and the number of podcasts I've done about it. But the bottom line is, mate, is when I got transferred to the main ward to recover, I sat there and I thought to myself, well, if I can't ride my bicycle anymore, I'm pretty like, what's next? And I was like, well, I can definitely run. And it was from my hospital bed that I sent a message to a friend of mine. And I said, there's this route across Corsica. It's about 200 kilometers and it has about 10,000 meters of elevation. It normally takes people 14 days to get across it. Let's do it in 4 days. And to which he replied, mate, you're in hospital. You can't move. I literally couldn't move. I had a catheter in, so I've got a piss bag in. I've got a tube into my lung taking off all the blood because I can't breathe either. I can't lift my arm. I was buckled. And he's like, just get yourself well. And I said, no, mate. I said, and this was on February about the 14th, almost 2 years ago now. And I said to him, no, mate. I said, we'll go and we'll start this on, like, I don't know, it was like the 3rd of July. And he's just like, yeah. And I meant it, mate. And that really resurged my running, because I was so scared to ride my bike after that. And I'm just slowly getting back into it now, 2 years later. And I just found this incredible space in running and this incredible freedom in running. And the thought of running across an island, it was across Corsica, which is south of France, west of Italy. It was just amazing. It was just an incredible adventure and a huge challenge. And actually, we did it. We did it in 5 days. We didn't quite do it in 4 days. We did it in 5 days. And it was actually a little bit more than 10,000 meters of elevation. It was like 13,000 meters of elevation. So those two things, if I can sum that up, mate, my accident has made me push more, because I, you know, some people say you're lucky that you lived, and I don't believe it. And you can go and check. My accident was on the 10th of February, 2018. If you go to my Instagram on the 9th of February, 2018, I posted a quote that I'd written. That's not mine. Someone else would have said it a million times. And it says, everything happens for a reason. I believe I was supposed to crash on that day. I believe I was supposed to go through that trouble. And I believe I was supposed to do the things that I'm doing now. And that's why when I have an idea to go long or to do one of these challenges, and it just feels right in my gut, I just go for it, mate. And that's what I was brought. I was brought into the world, into an environment that promotes performance. And it's up to me to live in that world. And I just encourage anyone, like, you can change your environment. Just go and live in the best environment that you can, that just encourages you to live the best life and perform to your absolute, you know, to your absolute limit. I don't want to say limit, because there isn't a limit, mate. Like, what's the limit? There isn't one, you know?
That's an absolutely amazing story. I've heard it as well. And you left out the part where you spent, was it like an hour fighting for each breath while you're waiting?
Yeah. I mean, mate, and that's another thing, mate. I crashed like an hour and a half drive in each direction, right in the middle from a hospital. Like, it was the perfect place not to crash, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is just wild. And, you know, you're laid there, mate, and I'm laid there on the floor, and it's just like, what do you do? And this is another thing. This is one of the key things that I speak a lot about, is like, well, you've essentially, in that situation, I had two choices, mate, if I look at it like this in reflection. Either fight for every single breath, or just die. And I just thought to myself, I was like, you know what? I love my life. I'm living a good life. And I think I've got quite a bit more to give. I'm like, there's no choice here. The only thing that I'm going to do is fight. And in a world that we live in today, mate, there's way too much choice. And that's why we're all so confused. And we end up sort of sitting around and trying to make decisions, and we can't. Like, you've got to choose to live and to live the best life. And if you do that, then a lot of things become non-negotiable. And, you know, we're just given, kids are given way too much choice these days. Adults, everyone's got way too much choice. But when life is that simple, you know, that, okay, I need to breathe. Like, that's all I could do, mate. And yeah, it took almost 2 hours to get to a hospital, and no painkillers, nothing. And, you know, blood's coming out of my mouth, and my shoulder's destroyed, and my ribs are poking into this lung that's collapsed. It was crazy time, mate. Crazy experience.
That is insane. And the way you can talk about it as well. The next thing I wanted to come on to then kind of comes off of that is, when, let's say, you have that voice in your head saying to stop, or like when you have every excuse why, oh, I've done enough. I've already done 150 kilometers. I haven't failed anything. No one can say that I'm a failure. I've done my knee, or I've done whatever. I have a pain. I can stop. What makes you keep going? Is it just that point of not giving yourself a choice to stop? Or what is it?
That's the thing, David. Like, everyone says there's a voice in your head. It's you. You are the fucking voice. You're talking to yourself. And you're trying to convince yourself that it's a good idea to stop, because you're giving yourself that choice, mate. And, you know, everyone talks about a plan B. There's no plan B. If you have a plan B, you're already setting yourself up to fail, in my opinion, mate. Now, there's loads of people that are going to argue and not agree with me, you know, like, what if this goes wrong? What if that? I want to share with you a what if story. It's when I was in intensive care, and I'd only been there for about 5 or 6 hours, and there, I was very, and this is when I had my crash, and I was in intensive care, and I was very drugged up, and my wife was sitting at the side of my bed, and I was like in and out of sleepiness with the drugs, and I was having a really tough time, mate, because it's just like, you know, I'd sleep and I'd want it to go away, but then I'd wake up and I'd realize I can't move and the pain is ridiculous. And I'd be like, why me? Why has this happened? And what if this? What if that? What if the other? And my wife looked at me and I could see it in her eyes. And she didn't say it, but she said it with her eyes, mate. She said, there's no what ifs, mate. She said, you're here. And I sort of said it out loud. And I decided from that point, I said, yeah, there's no what ifs. It could have been different. You're right. What if this, what if that? And you could sit around the whole day talking about what ifs. But the life that you're living is happening right now. And there's a fantastic book called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And I suggest everyone reads it. And if you don't want to read it, the clue is in the title. The power of now is absolutely huge. You live your life in the present. You can't sit around about the what ifs and creating these different scenarios. And in the next breath, I said to my wife, I said, well, I'm going to start training. And then she looked at me like I was really had too much drugs. But for me at that point, my training was just trying to move my left hand from palm down to palm up. And this, the reason why I tell you this story is not only for the what ifs, it's for that training. In every situation, mate, when the runs are not going good, when Excel spreadsheet is not going good, you have to admit that it's not going good. You have to recognize the situation. You then have to reject the fact, and these are the first two, these two things that are actually from a book, Endure, whereas the third and the next bit is my stuff. You have to reject that thing is going to stop you from achieving your goal because you're so clearly locked into your goal. And then the next thing I ask myself, what can I do right now to make this situation better? And let's take both of those examples, David. If I'm working on Excel spreadsheet and I've just come unstuck and I just can't figure it out and what I can do right now, the best thing I can do right now is probably just go for a walk outside, get some fresh air, have a glass of water, maybe have a double espresso and come back to it in 10 minutes. And it's exactly the same when I'm running an ultra. I go to myself, okay, I've recognized that I'm in a shit situation. This is not good. Like my legs are fucking sore. There's no point in trying to kid yourself that your legs don't hurt when you've run 150 miles. Like, you know that your freaking legs hurt, mate. So what's the point in trying to, and we're constantly trying to tell ourselves these bullshit stories. And no wonder our brain is not buying it. We're trying to sell our brain something that is just in the cold light of day is ridiculous, you know, and we're not willing to accept it. You've got to recognize it, but you've got to reject it. And then you've got to say, what can I do right now? And sometimes in running, the thing that you can do right now in that situation, one of the best things that you could probably do is maybe just sit down. Just sit down for a minute and just take that strain off your legs. Now you can go into it, oh, if you sit down too long, you're going to have this and that and the other. Okay, I'm not asking you to sit down for 3 hours. But in that moment where you might just sit down or you might just have something to eat or you might just tell a joke to one of your friends, you're going to get this, you're going to be moving forward. You're going to get this refocus and then you keep going towards your goal because you've rejected the fact that it's going to stop you. So I'm big on thinking that there aren't really voices in your head. It's actually you. And you're telling yourself things to justify to yourself why. We're constantly looking for justification. I'll call you up. I'll say, David, I'm thinking about going out on the piss this weekend. What do you reckon? You'd be like, yeah, mate, that's great. You've worked really hard this month and you haven't had a beer. And yeah. And then I'm like, okay, cool. That's David's stamp of approval for me. I'm super happy. We're ready to go. You know what I mean, mate? And we're constantly looking for this justification and authority from others who, you know, we don't need it. We just need to stay present and stay focused and realize that if you set out to do something, you're going to do it. Like, you've got to do it because you've already decided. And I think this is where a lot of people make a mistake. They decide to do something, but they don't really know why they want to do it, mate. And so when it gets a little bit hard, they've got no answers. And, you know, I've also, and this is what I think is very important, mate, to understand is I've also given up on things. I've pulled the pin on ultras. The first ultra I entered was a 300K single stage self-supported race. I pulled the pin at about 160K. I pulled the pin on something. I pulled out of two ultras. I pulled the pin on, it was actually a challenge that I was doing last July, which was a 50K bike ride, 50K run, 50K bike ride, and it was 48 degrees. And I pulled the pin for a very good reason in both of those situations. And although it hurts a lot at the time, and the first ultra hurt even more pulling the pin on that, you sort of look back and you realize why you're doing it. But, you know, most of the time is that we've got this voice. It's just ourselves. We're looking for justification, mate. People, the world's got a bit soft. People need to man up and actually follow through on things that they start to do. And you'll only do that if you understand why you've set out to do it in the first place.
100%. I agree with everything you just said. Cool. And not that I do it all, but it's definitely stuff I'm going to take note of. I'm looking forward to listening back to this. You're talking as well about kind of people are going a bit soft now. And I've heard you talk before about, you know, all these, like, everyone's a winner, everyone gets a participation medal thing. And that's something that you think definitely wouldn't have helped you get to where you are.
Yeah, it's interesting, mate. I mean, you know, David, I'm 41, I'm turning 42 this year. I was in school in the 80s and 90s. I'm old school, mate, but I know things move along. I just think that the way that we motivate people a lot these days is causing a lot of issues in the world. We are motivating people with food a lot, which is causing obesity. And we're motivating people. Like, if you weren't 1, 2, and 3, if you're not on the podium, no one cares. And I finished on the podium in races when I was younger. And I'm not saying this is right or this is wrong, but I think I believe for me it was right. You know, I'd have teachers saying, "Yeah, well done, Smith. Came third. Next week you should come first." Or, you know, it would be better if you're first. And they frame it in different ways. Sometimes they didn't even get well done, you know? And at the time I was like, these people are so hard to please. And is this right? Or is this wrong? And, you know, but end of the day, mate, like, you know, where do we go from here? And, you know, where does it get to? If I'm giving a kid a medal just because they've shown up at school, what do I have to give them to get the best out of them? Because showing up, for some people, yes, it's the best. And I said that before, for some people getting to work in the morning, that's the best. But when we're talking about sports performance, there's really a fine line, mate. And it's very difficult. I teach a lot of people. I'm not a teacher. I'm not in the education system. But my gym is an education system. And, you know, if people don't do well, we don't say well done. Because why should we bullshit people? What, so they keep paying us? I don't care. If you don't do well, I'm not going to tell you do well just so you rejoin next month. I'm going to tell you you're doing shit, but I can help you to do better. And I think that's where we're not managing the situations effectively. Like, I'll have clients and, you know, they're like, "You're not giving me much positive feedback." And I'll say, "Yeah, because your progress is shit. But I'm here to help you make it better. I know how I can make it better for you." And so that's kind of where I stand on it. And as I say, mate, some people might think it's a bit old school. Some people might just be listening and go, "This guy's a complete dick," but it's just the way I was brought up. And I just think, you know, I'm not, mate, there's people that have done way, way greater things than me. And, you know, look at Ross Edgley's swim around Great Britain. I always use that as an example. You know, he finished that swim a similar time, I think, to when I started my 30 marathons in 30 days, and feel like going, "Oh mate, what you're doing is awesome." I'm like, "Have you heard of this guy, Ross Edgley? He just fucking swam around Great Britain for 6 months. What I'm doing is a piece of cake," you know? And it's just, it's crazy, mate. But I just think we've lost a bit of check on reality, on what really is good and where we should be, you know, where we should be dishing out praise and stuff. And, you know, people are soft, mate. Like, you know, you can look at things. I mean, there's great things, and I'm all for technology and smartphones and all of this stuff. But, you know, I can live my life. I can get all my food delivered just because I've got a smartphone. It's not hard anymore. So when stuff is actually hard, people don't know how to behave. You know, they're a bit like, "Oh, oh no, this is effort. I just normally press a button on my smartphone and, you know, and the light switch comes on or my food arrives. And it's like, yeah, dude, that's just not the way it works when you're out in the wild against nature. Do you know what I mean? It's a lot different. But yeah, sometimes people say I'm a little bit old school and a bit archaic on it, mate. And my wife especially. And I know there's a double-edged sword. I'm not saying my way is the right way, mate. I just think there's certain ways, certain things that we could probably do a little bit better.
Yeah, no, just two things I want to pick out of that is, like, you're saying that you give a lot of harsh feedback, let's say, but I'd imagine with you, just from what I know of you, it's going to be in a positive way. Like, you want the best of them. It's with good intent. And that's kind of what it comes down to. If it's whether it's constructive or deconstructive criticism. And I can't imagine you'd ever give someone criticism in order to take them down a peg. It's more so.
No, mate, it's not. I mean, and that's the thing, mate. It's a lot of people call it sort of Marcus tough love. And I'm not trying to be an absolute hard ass here, mate. But I'm like, you know, I'm going to say that. I'm going to say in one breath, David, this is shit. It's unacceptable. But I'm here. I'm a coach, mate. I'm here to make it better for you. I know how to make this better for you. And even in situations I don't, mate, I'll say, this is shit, but let's work together to get it better. So yeah, it's not, I'm not trying to just pay people out and just knock people down, mate, but there has to be an understanding. And I think that's, you know, when you look at coaching, that's what, I'm not saying I'm a good coach, but that's what good coaches should be able to do. They should be able to have those difficult conversations with a client. And because end of the day, if you've set goals with a client and they want to run a sub 4-hour marathon or they want to back squat 100 kilos, there's got to be check-in points. And if you're not on track for those check-in points, at some stage, that client's going to fail. So it's best to pick it up early and say, David, you're not on track. I know why you're not on track. This is what we need to do. And I'm here for you, mate. So let's do this like this and we'll still get you that goal. And they're uncomfortable. They're uncomfortable conversations, mate, for a lot of the time. And people don't want to have them, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I also want to point out that you're probably the only person I've ever spoken to who would call 30 marathons in 30 days a piece of pie or a piece of pizza.
It's not too hard, mate. You just have to wake up every day and go running.
It's just one marathon 30 times, as you said.
That's it, mate. That's all. And, you know, that's another thing, mate. That's just a mindset thing. Like, I'll be straight up, you know, it might have sounded like a hard ass for the last 5 or 10 minutes, but when I was coming into that, mate, I was struggling a little bit. I was like, wow, this is quite big. And I just couldn't figure out how I was going to stay totally focused for 30 days. And I called up one of my friends and, you know, by the end of the conversation, we'd figured it out. And he asked me, what are you doing at the start? I said, oh, I'm going to do 30 marathons in 30 days. And he said, okay. And we talked about it. And at the end, he said to me, so just tell me again what it is you're going to do. And I was like, I'm going to run one marathon 30 times. And he goes, yeah, that's what you're going to do. So it's just one marathon a day. So all you're focused on is the one rather than 30. And they're just small little tricks, mate. But I need help. I ask for it. I have a lot of different mentors, mate. I have a lot of people, you know, I don't use social media a lot for inspiration. You know, I don't really follow a lot of people. I try and keep my feed quite clean because I don't want distractions, but I'll definitely go to some different pages at times looking for ideas, looking for inspiration. And I reach out to different mentors. I have business mentors that I'll reach out for if I need a business issue solved. You know, I've just come from lunch with a guy who's helped me a lot in my business, mate. And, you know, we had a conversation and managed to figure out a few things. We can't do it on our own, mate. And this is, I know there's a lot of stigma and a lot of chat these days around things like mental health and, you know, just asking for help. And I'm big on it, mate. I've got an ego, you know, as well. It's just the way it is. I want to win. I want to do well. But I also understand, mate, there's no way I can do it on my own. You know, my wife's the most amazing human there's ever been. And without her, mate, there's just no way I could do any of this stuff, you know? So you have to identify where you need help and rock and roll with it, you know? And sometimes it's brutal, mate. You know, like when I was in hospital, I'm walking down the ward. And this is a crazy image. I'm walking down this ward with a physio. I've got a gown that's open at the back, so my ass is hanging out. And he's clipped my blood bag, which is a pipe from my lung, and my piss bag, which is a pipe from my dick, on his belt. And we're walking down the corridor. It's like, I'm just in bare bones. So you have to be vulnerable at times and just accept the help from people.
Yeah, 100%. That's the only way to get better, really. Like, you need people, the kind of people around you, the people you surround yourself with. On that, who would be like the two or three people that you do follow on social media, if I was to direct people towards them?
Yeah, interesting, mate, because I sort of move a lot. Like, I followed and unfollowed Gary Vaynerchuk about 100 times. You know, I like it, and then like I just get annoyed, and then I'll unfollow him, and then I'll come across his stuff again. It'll just resonate, so I'll dip in and out of his stuff. I've loved Richard Branson for a long time, although I'm thinking culling him on Instagram, because these days I don't really find his content that interesting, but I always like to read his blog. And aside from that, mate, I don't really follow any. I don't have a lot of sporting heroes. I have a huge amount of respect for a number of sports stars, you know, Roger Federer. I've read so many sporting books, you know. I still have a lot of respect for what Lance Armstrong did. So I have a lot of people that I'll dip back to and use for different things. But, you know, mate, one thing that I'm getting more and more satisfaction from these days is just hearing people's stories, that maybe those people aren't massively sort of decorated, you know, they're not in the media. They're just, you know, I've listened to a lot of books recently where the person is just not really very well known at all. And, you know, they're just kind of doing something amazing. And I don't know, I listened to a Welsh guy the other day on Joe Rogan, a guy called Ash Dykes, who's a Welsh adventurer, and he just does amazing stuff. But yeah, like he's just what you'd say is quite a normal guy. So I don't think it's always the guys that are up in lights and that's super famous, mate, that dish out. I get a lot of inspiration just from normal people just doing abnormal things, and I think it's amazing.
Yeah, 100%. So I'm conscious of your time, so just a few kind of quick fire questions to finish off. Do you think people have at any time reached the like limit of human potential physically? Because I know a lot of it does come down to the mental side. Even, for example, the fella who got the sub 2-hour marathon.
Yeah. I mean, mate, people have reached their limit. Now, whether they've had to stop because it's been mental or physical, you can argue. And this is a conversation I have a lot, because we hear a lot about being in pain and suffering. No one can tell you how much pain you're in. However, we as humans will continue to go faster and for longer. Kipchoge ran sub 2. It'll be less than 12 months before someone runs sub 2 in a normal marathon on a normal day. It'll be a very special day, but it'll just be one of the marathons. Someone will run longer. Ross Edgley swam long around Great Britain. Humans will continue to push the bar up, but humans also, I could put you on a treadmill and put it on the pace that Kipchoge runs and make you run for as long as possible. I can pretty much guarantee, even if I put up $10 billion, even if you're massively motivated by money and I put up $10 billion, could you physically today run at that speed? I don't think so. So it does prove that, yes, there are certain limits, but I really think that 99% of humans are operating within their limits, mate. And I know, because it's history and we can see it, humans will continue to get faster and they will continue to go longer.
100%. What is your biggest regret?
I don't have any.
None?
No.
Great to hear.
And I get asked that a lot. I don't have any, and I don't really have much time to sit around and think, oh, I would have done this different, I would have done that different, because I cannot control it, so I don't put any ounce of energy into it. And when I answer like that, probably a lot of your listeners thought the same, you arrogant bastard. No, it's not because I'm arrogant, it's because I don't have any energy for it, mate. Of course, if you said, would you have done things different? I wouldn't have done things different, mate. I did things, I made those decisions at that time based on how I felt, based on my gut feeling, based on data that I had. Could I have done things different? Yeah, of course I could have done things different, mate. Could have done loads of things different. I could have fueled different before a race, but I fueled in the way that I fueled because at that time, that was the best decision I had. And I think a lot of people are sat around with regrets and they invest energy and time in stuff that they can't change instead of things that are going to happen in the present or in the future that they can impact. And if anything from my message from this show, mate, just control what you can control to make life better every single day.
Yeah, I can't agree more. I think there's no point wasting time on the past. You definitely can't change it. What does your morning routine look like, or do you have one?
Yeah, mate, I definitely have one. Super important. Every single day is the same. I always set my alarm 1 minute before the time that you'd think I'd get up. So if you say we're getting up at 5, I'll always set it at 4:59. If it's 10 to 5, I'll set it at 4:49. So I'm always 1 minute ahead of you. I've won the day already. It's a very big mental thing, and it shows I respect time, which I massively do. And the second thing I do in the morning is I hug my wife and I tell her I love her. And even when I'm not with her, I'll send her a message. And then I'd normally leave the bed before she does. Very straightforward then, mate. I always have 500 mils of water. I normally go for a shit. I have a cup of coffee and I'll try and do some reading in the morning, normally when I'm having a shit. And basically, that's me, mate. I love the early morning. Some days I'll listen to a podcast on in the way where I'm going. Other days I'll listen to Pearl Jam. It just depends, mate, how I'm feeling. But that routine of the time of my alarm, hugging my wife, telling her I love her, the first few drinks I have in the morning and a little bit of reading in the morning happens no matter where I am in the world, no matter what day it is, basically. And I love every single bit of it.
Amazing. Last couple here now. What would you tell your 20-year-old self? This is a question I ask every guest that comes on because I'm 20 and most of my
Yeah, very good one, mate. It's what I've said a number of times. Wake up every single day and ask yourself, what can I do today to get better?
Amazing. Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Interesting, mate. It's a funny one. And a lot of people say to me, oh, you've got, you know, you're very good with goals, timelines, this and that and the other. Where are you going to be in 10 years? Mate, I don't really plan like that for my life. It's quite weird. And the reason being is because when I set up my business, I was quite relaxed about it. And I said, so long as we'll do everything that falls under our slogan of making people better at life, as long as we're making people better at life, I'm down with it. I'll continue to do what I'm doing, mate. I'll be doing my motivational talks. I'll be running businesses. I'll be the best husband I can to my wife. I'll be waking up every single day, making sure I'm challenged. I'll be doing extreme challenges, no matter if they're as extreme as they are now or more extreme. And I'll just be trying to live every single day. And also in the service of others, mate, I love coaching people. I love helping people. I love trying to unleash human potential in people. And I want to continue doing that. Where I'll be doing that, I have no clue. Maybe in Australia. My wife wants to go back to Australia at some stage. So maybe there. I love it down there as well. It's good fun.
Amazing. Your favorite book or one book you would recommend most people to read?
I think it goes back to Richard Branson, mate. Losing My Virginity. I read that when I was very young. And yeah, it's nothing about actually losing your virginity. But it's all about starting up a business and just, you know, just cracking on with things and just give things a shot. Like Branson, you know, everyone sees him now as this older guy. But geez, when he was young, mate, they were doing just crazy stuff and they just gave stuff a shot. And that's one book that I always tell like young people to read. If people are entrepreneurs, give it a read. I think there's just so many lessons in it, but don't just read it. We read a lot. We consume a lot of content. Go and do something about it. Take his tools, take his learnings, take his advice, take his mistakes, and go and do something really cool with it. And that's what I just really hope younger people do these days.
Perfect. And last one, who would be your number one podcast guest?
I would, mate, you know, I've been asked that before. I would like to speak to Branson. Really would. And it's like he's my hero. I would like to speak to Branson. What I would also like to do is, which I've never done, and this probably is the start of it, I would actually like to get my dad on the show and really get like deep with him in a way, you know, really almost ask him some of the questions that I've asked you, you've asked me, sorry, David. And yeah, that would be quite interesting. I just don't know how it would pan out, but maybe I should do that. So yeah, and then I guess other crazy people, mate, like I just like people. It's not, I've had quite a lot of famous people on my podcast, you know, Olympians, all this, that, and they all have great stories. But some of the stories, some of the shows that I enjoy the most are just with like what we just call normal people, mate, that just have decided to live life. And I think that's awesome. I just like seeing people getting out there and living.
Love it. I look forward to listening to that one.
Yeah.
So last thing, just any pages that you want to call out, your Instagram is probably the best one to find you, MJD_
Instagram is the best place to find me, MJD_Smith. I've replied to all my DMs on there. Hit me up, ask me whatever you want. I'll help you as much as I can. Obviously, my website is at innerfight.com and my private blog, my personal blog is MJDSmith.com. But yeah, hook us up, give us a shout. And I just really hope, mate, by the time that we've spent together and, you know, your effort that you've put into the show, if one person leaves the show and goes and does something good and just manages to level up their life and feel like they're living more, then you've done a fantastic job, mate. So I just really appreciate you taking the time to interview me. And, you know, hopefully if we help one person, mate, we've crushed it.
Thanks so much. My pleasure. This was absolutely amazing. As we put it in the week.
Easy peasy, mate. That's cool. Thank you so much for chatting to me.
Thank you.